that's the core of it. And the heart of it, the heart of standing before God with your mind and your heart, is really the experience of eternity in the present. It's the experience of eternity. Now, what does eternity feel like? What is eternity? That's the question. Well, it's the presence of God. It's really nothing but the presence of God. But sometimes you can begin to experience eternity, or you can feel sort of the bow wave. You can feel a wave of eternity creeping up on you. And then you may realize that you're in the presence of God. But the prayer of the heart, or interior prayer, is really the practice of being present, being yourself, being present in eternity. Now. Now, not after you die. Now. That's the goal. That's really the goal. Our goal is not to just sort of hang in there and be as good as other people think, tell us, until we die, and then hope we get through the dread judgment seat. The prayer, or the aim of noetic prayer, the aim of unceasing prayer, the aim of interior prayer, is to experience eternity now. They talk about the certainties. What are the certainties of life? Death and taxes, right? But actually, spiritually, there are four and possibly five certainties. And, of course, death is a certainty. How you do your life, how you live your life, is full of uncertainties, right? Death is a certainty. Judgment is a certainty. Death and judgment are certainties. We know that in our hearts. We know it. Even though we can't understand it, but somehow we know it. That's our whole conscience is based upon that. Those are certainties. Heaven and hell are the other two characteristic classical certainties. Heaven and hell, death and judgment. But there is a fifth certainty, perhaps the most important one for us, within the context of the others, and that is the present moment. We are certain of the present moment. There's always going to be one until there isn't. But while you have them, you can be certain that you are going to have a present moment, like now. But it never stays. There is no time in the now, right? There is no space. There is no space of time where you can kind of, I'm in the present. No, you just went in the past. So there is no time in it. There is no space in it. You can't luxuriate in it. You can't take a bubble bath in it. But it's there. And it's a tremendous gift of God, because God is in it. See? God is in the present moment. And He is calling. He's knocking at the door of our heart. He's knocking at the door of our heart in the present moment. And we have, as long as we live, we have that present moment. And that is why this is so important. That's why this type of interior prayer is so crucial. If you get the feel for striving to live in the present moment with interior prayer, it will immensely enrich everything else you do in the spiritual life. It will immensely enrich your psalmody, the doing of the hours, the daily round, of monastic life, or whatever, the experience of the divine liturgy. All of that will be uplifted to another level, and another level, and another level upon that. There's no end to it. In this, once you grasp the absolute significance of the present moment, and that only you can only pray this prayer in the present moment. So, the fasting part of it And this is in partial answer to a question that somebody asked me on my first talk about fasting. The fasting part of it essentially is the connected with the purification of one's interior being while one prays. Prayer and fasting. Fasting should never be disassociated with prayer. Fasting is connected with prayer at all times. And of course, as Orthodox, we fast more than anybody else. But if we enter the fast unconsciously, or we enter it with the idea that we will endure, we will simply endure, we'll gird up our loins and we'll try to make it through, that is not the kind of fasting that is that one means by neptic fasting. I have brought a few quotations about fasting from St. Gregory Palamas, St. Isaac of Syrian, St. Diodocus of Photiki, St. John of the Ladder, and they all are saying more or less the same thing. They say, fasting with discernment. Fasting with discernment. Fasting with discernment. They always add the phrase with discernment, or fasting in the right way, true fasting. What do they mean by that? Well, it essentially means what I've just said. A discernment is to recognize why you are fasting. Now, why is it? And really, why you are fasting is one thing and one thing only. You are fasting so that you can pray. Really, the heart of fasting is to be able to stand in the presence of God with your mind and your heart in prayer. That's the key to fasting. That's why it's united with prayer. And the discernment is to recognize that, to be aware, to be conscious, to be watchful while fasting. True fasting, neptic fasting, requires vigilance. Vigilance of mind, watchfulness of mind. Because, why is that? Because in the practice of fasting, it's the most effective way to become conscious of all of our sins. To become conscious of where we are unconsciously holding on to many things, whatever they might be. It's possible to pray and not be conscious that one is not really praying well. It's possible to fast in the wrong spirit, and the wrong spirit of fasting is thinking about how good it's going to be when you stop fasting. You know, they all say that. All the great fathers say, and in fact, in particular, John of the Ladder is full of very, very straightforward, humorous remarks about those who fast in that sort of way, the sort of gluttonous fasting, you know, which is yes, you are fasting, and boy, you are going to celebrate when it's over. You know what I mean? And you know, we laugh because we all have that to some extent, and it's perfectly fine. So let me just read you a couple of these quotations, which show you how fasting is linked with prayer. And I'll begin with the battleship here. I'll begin with a quotation from one of the homilies of St. Isaac the Syrian. This is from Homily 40. And here's what he says. This is Isaac the Syrian speaking now. Having been tempted over a great length of time in things from the right hand and from the left, and testing myself often in both, and having received countless blows from the adversary, and been deemed worthy of great and secret aid, I have carried on an examination of myself for many long years. And through experience and God's grace, I have learned that the foundation of all good things, the return of the soul from the enemy's captivity, and the path which leads to the light and itself brings life, are these two virtuous activities. To remain collected in one place and to fast perpetually. I mean, to set for yourself the rule of wise abstinence in food, of prudent and immovable continuance in one place, and then he adds a third, and of unremitting study and rumination on God. From this is born the submission of the senses. From this is born the watchfulness of the intellect. By this, the ferocity of the passions, which rage in the body, is tamed. From this comes meekness of thoughts. From this comes the mind's luminous movements. From this is born the zeal for the practice of virtue. From this are born sublime and subtle intuitions. From this are born boundless tears which flow at all times, and the remembrance of death. From this is born pure chastity, which is remote from every imagination that tempts the mind. From this comes clairvoyance and the keen knowledge of things afar off. From this is born the most profound of mystic perceptions, which the mind can apprehend, that is, the strength of divine utterances, the innermost movements which arise in the soul, and the discrimination and discernment of spiritual things. But to put it succinctly, I'm skipping a little, from these two are born the freedom of the true man, the soul's renewal, and resurrection with Christ in the kingdom. Now, he links then fasting with continuation in one place, which of course accords with monastic life, which he was a hermit. But the continuation in one place we can see as truly prayer. Now here's from St. Gregory Palamas, from his homilies. It's on the fourth Sunday of Holy Lent. And he says, he's talking about the transfiguration and Moses and Elias talking with the Lord. And he says, these two men practiced prayer and fasting more than anyone else. And their appearance while the Lord was praying shows the harmony and the concord between fasting and prayer. In their talking with the Lord, it was as if fasting were talking to prayer. As we learn from Moses, in the same way, all the parts and members of our body suffering hardship because of fasting cry unto the Lord, and joining their voices to the prayer of the faster, pray together with him. They make his prayer highly acceptable and justify him for having voluntarily undergone the toil of fasting. So then, after having prayed and shone with divine light, the Lord came down from the mountain, approached the crowd and his disciples, to whom the man with the demon had been brought. On the mountain, he showed that the reward for fasting was not merely great, but all-surpassing, for he revealed that their prize was divine radiance. Now that he had descended, he would prove they also had power over demons. So there you have a very key statement on fasting. How it's linked with prayer. How it makes prayer acceptable. And what does that mean? If prayer that is acceptable is said more readily, more easily, more perfectly. It purifies something within. And it does so, all of them mention this. It does so because of two things. One, because the fathers all link the fall with Adam's failure to fast. Mm-hmm. that the heart of the fall was Adam's failure to acknowledge, to participate in the fast that he was given, which was not to eat from the tree of life. And they all say that our redemption from the fall, our transfiguration redemption, came about when Christ, after he was baptized, which is now in the liturgical cycle, went into the wilderness and fasted for 40 days and then defeated the Satan in the great battle at the desert, the three great temptations that he defeated Satan for. And then the third element as to why fasting works with prayer is when we fast out of obedience, we voluntarily take upon ourselves this practice of fasting, and we do it so that our being can come into the presence of God. We do it not just out of blind obedience, but out of vigilant watchfulness. And we fast that way. And that in itself gives us powerful strength in prayer. And so it makes us pray very well.